Welcome to SEE Homeschoolers 2017 National School Choice Week online conference, sponsored by NASH. I am your host, Mary Buckroff, and today we're conversing with Emily Cook from Build Your Library. Welcome, Emily. It's great for you to be here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, we're great. Okay, so the title of your conference is Charlotte Mason Secular Homeschooling. For anyone who happens to be out there who isn't familiar with who Charlotte Mason is or what Charlotte Mason homeschooling is all about, why don't you give us some background information, if you would?
Sure. Charlotte Mason was actually a British educator around the turn of the 20th century. And at that time, in that place, children were seen as blank slates that needed to be filled with information, and she was against that. She was one of the first people to point out that children have their own ideas, and they are individuals who are capable of independent thought. And so her goal was to help educators to use that and to, rather than fill their slates, give them ideas and facts and interesting things to think about. And the education philosophy mostly stayed in Great Britain during that time. But in the last 20 or so years, she's experienced kind of a revival in the homeschool community.
Okay. And so is that education philosophy one that is, I'm a little familiar with her education philosophy. It involves a lot of living books and nature. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, well, why don't we define for our listeners what a living book is, in case anyone is not familiar.
Okay, a living book is one that actually has several facets. It should be well-written. It should be written by a single author that is passionate about the subject they're writing about, and it should make the reader care about the material they're reading. It could be a piece of literature that draws you into the story and makes you feel something that you're reading about, or like the people that you're reading about are real and living in real situations. It can be nonfiction that just makes you want to seek out more information and learn more about the topic because the author is clearly very excited about the subject matter and they make you want to get excited. It's a book you just find yourself thinking about months and even years after you've read it.
Okay, so almost anything really could fall into that category except for, I'm assuming, the obvious, which are textbooks.
Yeah, well, obviously, textbooks, I would say, for the most part, would not be living just because they tend to fact dump and just, like, throw a lot of information at you without making it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So those don't tend to fall under living books.
Okay. And well, what about, I know that we personally in our my homeschooling journey with my daughter and other friends, we do use reference materials like, for example, the Usborne reference books and that sort of thing. So those wouldn't be considered living books either, would they?
I would argue they can be because they are very interesting and the pictures are really enticing. Anything that really draws you in and makes you want to seek out more. So I like to use those as a spine. I wouldn't use that as the only part of our history, but or our science for that matter. But if you add in more material to kind of round it out, then yes, those absolutely can be used in a living books manner.
Okay. Well, I have some of your curriculum, and I have friends who have used your curriculum as well. And I know that you, on your website, you talk about how it's important to not only use classic literature, but also modern literature as well.
Absolutely, yes.
So I was wondering if you might kind of touch on how you choose the living books that you do, and what are the importances between making sure that there's some classics as well as what the importance is of using modern literature?
Okay, I spend a lot of time reading about books, and I spend a lot of time on Goodreads and Amazon and just hunting for more information about a lot of different kinds of books. And I tend to have some rules that I use when I'm selecting those books. I look for books that are well-written, that are interesting and something that I personally enjoy reading. And I mean, those can be subjective. Obviously, what I enjoy reading might not necessarily be something that you would enjoy reading. But I think that it's helpful because I'm choosing for my children specifically when I pick books. But I also tend to try to think, and what would other kids like too? So if a book passes through the mom filter, then I tend to think it's probably a good book. And I think it's important to choose a variety of styles of books because kids tend to get into a rut when they read, and they might read nothing but fantasy or nothing but Junie B. Jones type books because that's what's comfortable for them. So I think it's really important to expose children to a variety of genres, and obviously classics are important, and I try to incorporate several classics throughout each school year, but I also think that there are so many good modern books that should not just get swept under the rug because they weren't published while Charlotte Mason was alive. I mean, there's Harry Potter is a living book, and The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert is an amazing living book, and graphic novels can be living books. There are just so many awesome books that have been written in the last 100 years or 50 years. So I try to fit in lots of different kinds of material.
Okay. Now, this may sound like an odd question to ask. I even feel like it's an odd question to ask, but I'm going to ask it in the hopes that maybe someone in the audience is thinking this to themselves as well. What do you define as good literature? Because you said that frequently. One of your most important points is to find good literature. What defines good literature for you?
For me, it's a book that is beautifully written that makes me feel. So if I read a book and I'm just like the writing is stilted or it doesn't sound very realistic or I can't get into the head of the character that I'm reading about, then that's not good literature to me.
Okay. Because I think sometimes people wonder, I'm going to use a horrible example, but I'm going to use it on purpose. You know, Twilight series sold multi-million dollars worth of, copies, and I even read them, and I enjoyed them for what they were. I would never classify them as good literature, but some people really thought they were great books, not just entertaining books, but great books, and I know that oftentimes that sort of choice is frowned upon by those who would argue that that's not good literature, but if it were something that really engaged, especially, let's say, a reluctant reader, then would you still say that it's completely acceptable to allow that then?
Oh, absolutely. I think I see a lot of book snobbery out in the Charlotte Mason circles, but in the homeschool world in general, there's a lot of that. And I really hate the word twaddle, but that kind of book, Twilight, would often be considered twaddle. I would argue that if it is engaging the child, if they are reading and they are picking up a book on their own and reading it, then that is absolutely worthy. There is no reason to tell them that they shouldn't read it because it's twaddle. It's not a good book. But yeah, if a book is inspiring a child or an adult, for that matter, to pick up a book and read, then it is absolutely worthy. That would be good literature.
Excellent. Okay. Well, so I know that a component of your approach with the literature is that there's read-alouds that you as the adult are actually reading to your children, as well as them obviously doing independent reading of their own. Do you continue that out loud reading even into their high school years?
Yes, I do. I've actually read aloud to my teens this morning.
Oh, wonderful. So what is it about reading aloud that is so important, in your opinion, as an important aspect of that literature-based homeschooling?
I think reading aloud is just so important. When children are young and they can't read yet, it's just the obvious thing to do. You obviously would read to them because you want to expose them to books. But once they start to read on their own, it seems natural to just pass the torch to them and let them just read on their own. But I would argue that it's really important to continue to read aloud. For one, you can expose them to books they would never otherwise pick up. A new reader is going to want to stick to simple chapter books like Magic Treehouse and similar, and that's fine for them to read on their own, but their comprehension is higher, especially if you've been reading to them all along. So you can read them books like The Hobbit or Charlotte's Web that they would not necessarily be able to handle on their own, and it'll also stretch the vocabulary. And not only that, but reading will create the amazing bond when you read a book with your children. it's going to give you a sort of family culture of books that you've shared. And one of the things is kids talk about books that they've read or make references to a piece of literature that we've shared before, or I see them get really excited about a new genre that I've exposed them to, and that's just such a cool thing to see. So I think reading aloud and sharing books with them is also another great way to maybe bring up a conversation that you don't necessarily know how to start, but you want to get them thinking about. Like, for example, life is full of hard truths, so what better way to bring up these kinds of conversations than with a good book? Like Charlotte's Web, for example, can show how sometimes a beloved friend dies, not because of a terrible illness or accident, but because it's just a part of life. Or the book Darby, for example, by Jonathan Scott Fuqua, that is a great one to teach that when there is injustice in the world, we need to be brave enough to stand up to it, even when everyone tells us we shouldn't, because literature can build a sense of empathy. So I just think it's a really important part of our homeschooling venture that I share books with my kids and talk about what we're reading.
Because when you read a book, it becomes a part of who you are.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Well, so would you say then that you could, say someone who has been homeschooling for a while and hasn't taken that approach or is new to homeschooling but has an older child, maybe they decided middle school, they pulled them out. Can you start back to reading aloud to your children at any age, even if they're almost a teenager?
Oh, yeah, I think you could. It might feel weird at first. For both of you, I would think.
Right.
But I think once you get used to it, you could definitely still share books. I know my 17-year-old, and I mean, I've been reading to her for her whole life, but she's been sort of distancing herself when I do read alouds. I think she's thinking she's outgrowing it, but every now and then she'll still come and, like, bring me a book and just kind of suggest that we read it. So I think it's something that you can absolutely jump in at any point.
It definitely sounds like something that we would have seen 100 years ago in a family home. You know, one adult or one of the older children pulling out whatever novel they were reading, and everyone sitting around before there was such a thing as television or Netflix or the internet. So I can totally see where it's got a very valid history to it, the enrichment that comes from reading aloud as a family. I read an article not too long ago, and I wish I could cite the article, but I can't right off the top of my head. But it was a piece about how picture books can still be useful to teaching even high schoolers elements of literature. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I bring out picture books all the time with my older kids, and sometimes they roll their eyes at me, but picture books can be excellent resources. They're very well written, especially if you find some that are more nonfiction in style, but even the fiction ones like Jan Brett picture books, Tommy DePaola picture books, things like that, they can be excellent resources for just using for literary devices and literary analysis, even for artwork, studying different artist, a really good example of this. I love her picture books, but we love to just sit and stare at the pictures because there's so many intricate parts, and that's a great tool, especially I have a child who hopes to be a comic book artist someday, so it's really great for him to focus on different styles of artwork used in books.
Oh,
so that
right.
He can practice
yeah,
that.
It incorporates the visual arts into the...
Yeah, because you can absolutely tell. We have picture books that tell a whole story with no words, and I think that can be an excellent way to even get a reluctant writer to come up with a story on their own to go with the book. I wish I could think of them off the top of my head. But there's some really great wordless picture books. That's a great tool for getting reluctant writers to come up with a story.
Yeah, I've used it some in teaching when I was first introducing at the junior high level, coming back to the literary devices and even plot and those sort of things, mm-hmm. whatever. And
yeah.
I found it useful, especially when some of the good ones are just, I mean, I still enjoy, I'm a grown adult, but I still enjoy reading some of my, looking through and the picture books that still hold a place in my heart because they became a part of who I was when I read them as a child.
Yes.
And I still have my original copy of The Snowy Day, you know, and that was one of the first ones.
I love that one.
And, of course, I have others, but that one just popped into my mind because this is about the time of year I usually like to look at it again when I'm sitting here in the South wishing for some snow or a white Christmas or something. So you continue on then. You do the read-alouds. Your intent then is to continue doing this all the way. You said you have a 17-year-old, so clearly all the way through high school that becomes. Do you ever have the older children become the ones who read to the younger ones?
Yes, I've had. I give them picture books to read to their little sister all the time because I think it's a skill, too, that I want them to develop is to be able to read aloud. It's a good way to teach them public speaking, too, because they have to speak in inflection and tone.
Yes, uh-huh. There's an act to it, I think. There really is. Because not everyone's necessarily an accomplished out loud reader. So I have a question. Do you consider then, someone told me once many, many years ago when I was just considering homeschooling, that if you want your child to be able to write well, you need to have them read good literature. And I think there's some truth to that. Do you incorporate then, is the majority of your grammar a part of what they get from the literature, or do you teach that as a separate component?
I think you can absolutely teach that just with really good books, but you as the teacher would need to have a good command of grammar to be able to do that. So I think there are some good materials out there to help with that. But, yeah, reading really good books and exposing your child to lots of good vocabulary, lots of good writing in different styles can give them the natural ability to write well because that's what they're used to seeing and that's what they're used to hearing.
Right.
I know my oldest is just a natural writer, and she's just able to take that material that she's been reading her whole life, and she can write really well. My twins, maybe not so much, but they're just not that. They're more math and science and music and art than writing. But yeah, you can do quite a lot with literature as the base with dictation. We do a lot of dictation where we take a passage of good writing and we study it and we look through it. We look at the punctuation, we look at the mechanics, and we spend a couple of days just really focusing on that passage. And then I read it aloud to them and they write it down from listening. And
the text mentoring that I hear a lot about. And I've actually had my daughter do some of that work, text mentoring, where you take even just one beautifully written sentence from a really great piece of literature and have them model writing in that same way, obviously with maybe a different topic or whatever. It's sort of similar to that then that you're speaking of, yes?
Yeah, it's similar to that.
Okay, awesome. Well, so how does it work with the read alouds, homeschooling, and of course the more I only homeschool one and you homeschool several, how do you work that in? Is it a daily activity with each of your children? Do you all just share? And I mean, once you get, we have ages and grades that are far enough apart, what does that look like? How do you make that work?
For me personally, something that I started doing a really long time ago was I like to peg reading aloud to something that happens at the same time every day. So I tend to want to read aloud at meal times because that is when my children are sitting still. They're putting things in their mouth so they're not likely to start talking. And they're focused because there's nothing else to do while they're sitting at the table eating. So that, for me, works out the best time to read aloud. And for the most part, that's our family reading time. So I'll read a book that I'm hoping will appeal to all of them. My youngest, maybe not so much, but she's used to kind of walking in and out. But that's our morning time with all of my children. And then once they listen to their reading for the day, they go off to do their thing. And then I sit down with my 7-year-old, and that's when we have our morning time where we sit and read books that are more geared toward her listening level.
Gotcha. Well, now, during the course of your read-alouds, what does that actually look like? Do you allow for questions or conversations as interesting parts get, you know, one of your children excited or curious about something, or is it just silence on their part and you're just reading however many pages or chapters you do?
If we're reading a piece of literature, I'll tend to ask them to wait until I'm done reading, because if they interrupt too much, it kind of messes up the flow of the story. But if I'm reading a chapter from a science book, for example, if they have a question, I'll stop and we'll talk about it, and then we'll go back to the reading.
Okay. Well, now, this may be sort of an obvious question and answer, but Charlotte Mason was a religious educator, was she not, or am I incorrect in that? Yes.
Well, so, at that time and in that place, everyone was. I think it was the common thing. Yeah.
Right. So is the answer to secularizing Charlotte Mason just simply about making sure that you select secular materials? Is that as simple as that, to incorporate
the method of
homeschooling? And do you find it fairly easy to find secular resources when you're trying to focus maybe in more in the nonfiction with science and history, or have you had good success finding those sources?
It can be harder to find if you're looking for curriculum in particular, like already made curriculum. It can be really hard to find science, especially, that is secular. But if you just look for specific books, then I think it's a lot easier.
You have an easier time of it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, now I'd like to turn our attention to a question I have that I have on behalf of our listeners and for myself, actually, because I happen to have a child who is a very reluctant reader. How can someone make this literature, because I love literature, I'm a reader, I've been a reader my whole life, and I have eclectic taste in reading nonfiction and fiction alike, and all I ever dreamed of was having a child who had the same passion.
Yeah.
And, you know, be careful what you wish for, because sometimes you don't get it. So what advice would you give to me or anyone who has a child who just frankly doesn't like reading? In incorporating a literature-based curriculum as you use?
I actually have two reluctant readers. My boys do not like to read, and they will tell people all the time, oh, I hate reading, and that breaks my heart a little bit. But oddly enough, they enjoy being read to, so I can read to them, and they have a fairly long list of books that they will say that they, oh, I do like that book. And so there are books that they like, but I know that I have a limited amount of time while I can get them to read, because I like just know that when they grow up, they're probably not going to pick up books on their own anymore. So I tend to really work hard at finding things that I know they will enjoy, because of course I still want them to read on their own. I can't just read to them all the time, although they would love that. But I try to pick books that I think will appeal to them, and I've kind of gotten to where I know immediately what they will and will not like. So I narrow down books. They love disaster books. They love anything with a good adventure or a battle or, you know, really exciting things. They're not big on the domestic life or romance or things like that. So obviously they're never going to read Anne of Green Gables or Little Women or any of those books that I think are fabulous. But
right.
I will definitely make sure that they do find things that they will like. So, yeah, I tend to really focus on that.
Well, do you feel it's important at all that they at least have some sort of exposure or understanding of, you know, sort of like that culture that we come from, where we make references to things and you won't understand the reference unless you at least are maybe haven't read but are familiar with that Dickens novel or Little Women or Emma or some Shakespeare play or whatever. Do you have another way that you, at least in, that you try to expose them to that you implement? And if so, can you share that with us?
Yep. If there's something that I really want them exposed to, that I know that they will not read it, and that I don't think that I'll be able to get them to sit through me reading it, then we'll look for a movie So, for example, I don't think they're ever going to read Little Women, but I can maybe put the movie on for them, and they'll watch the movie, and it's only 2 hours of their life, and then they'll know the references for that, for example. Or Shakespeare is something that we do tend to watch more necessarily than read, although I do try to read the play with them before we watch it. But
Shakespeare was
meant
to be watched, seen. Really.
Yeah, so we tend to rather watch it than read it. But yeah, so if I think it's something that they will just not listen to or not read, then we'll look for a movie and get it that way.
So I know there are resources out there because I've actually looked for them and found them. I have a daughter who is obsessed with all things plays, movies, Broadway, and I actually do use and will use movies as literature. So, and I know some people frown on that idea. So do you, so you consider that if all else would fail, that is an acceptable avenue to pursue?
Yes, because movies can be as good, I hate to say as good as a book, but in some cases they can be because they get the story across in a visual manner, but there's still a lot of literary devices being used in the movie. So you can still get a lot out of the story that way, and you can still discuss it with your children. And yeah, I think that it can be a valid way to do that.
Right. And if you're never going to get your child to read Anna Karenina, then at least you can get them to watch it.
Yes, absolutely.
There's
no way my boys are going to read that.
Right, exactly, because I have a very...
Yeah.
So you were saying how you think that eventually, you know, your boys will grow up, and I know it saddens you, it saddens me that they'll never really be passionate readers picking up books on their own. So do you just come to a place where then you just accept that this is who they are and this is how it is, and you'll just do your best with them to get them as exposed to as much great literature as you possibly can, and then after that it's up to them whether they pursue that or not? Yeah, it's a hard thing to accept
definitely.
As a lover of books.
It is hard to accept,
yeah.
But I figure I've got them for a limited number of years, and I'm going to read as many books as I can and get that exposure in there. So, yeah, I still hope that maybe when they grow up, they'll pick up a book on their own. But, you know, as long as I know that I've done my part, then I can feel good about that. Yeah.
Right. Well, so I asked you for some of your recommendations for the specific topics of science and history as a secular homeschooler. But if someone were just wanting to start out with a literature-based homeschooling style, what would you recommend to them, like maybe your favorite living books that they could look into getting?
Sure. I think something to get started, like for poetry, for example, get a good collection like The Random House Book of Poetry for Children is really nice for elementary level. Shel Silverstein. If you have a child who isn't necessarily interested in listening to poetry, start with Shel Silverstein because his stuff is hilarious, and I've never known a child to not love it. And that's a really great introduction to poetry.
Mm-hmm.
The Poetry for Young People series is also really good. Yeah.
Okay.
Fairy tales is really important for cultural literacy. So I like to read fairy tales to all ages, really. But for younger kids, The Treasury of Children's Literature is our family favorite. It's by Armand Eisen, and it is gorgeous. It's just the pictures are so pretty. And it has a pretty decent mix of fairy tales, Aesop fables. I think there's a little bit of poetry in there. Classic tales like The Three Bears, Goldilocks and the Three Bears, and things like that are in there, but also some more obscure ones. So that's a really nice book. I also like incorporating tales from other cultures. So we've really liked the Us Born Stories from Around the World book, and the Nelson Mandela's Favorite African Folk Tales is really well done. Those are nice. If you're looking for really good read-alouds for the younger ages, I would say The Tale of Despereau by Kate DiCamillo is probably my all-time favorite, just because that's the first book that my twins fell in love with, and they still talk about it, and they were six when we read it, and that was like the book that got them. So that book has earned a place in my heart. Charlotte's Web by E.B. White is a really good one. Anything by Roald Dahl is always really fun. And those are also fun for read-alouds because there's so many opportunities to do weird voices.
Mm-hmm.
For older children, I highly recommend The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. The Mysterious Benedict Society by Trenton Lee Stort is really good. The Hunger Games series, that's a really fun one for sparking some really wild discussion about all kinds of things. That book led us on so many rabbit trails, talking about government systems around the world and dystopian world.
Too. That was one of the series that my daughter actually read by herself and really enjoyed. I completely agree with you. It was some very interesting conversations result from that.
Yeah. The Discworld series by Terry Pratchett, that's fun for reading aloud too, and those are also really witty. Those are kind of along the same style as Bill Bryson's writing. That's like the fiction equivalent to Bill Bryson's writing, I think. Neil Gaiman's books, especially the Graveyard Book and Coraline for a younger audience, those are really good read aloud. Watership Down. I can't not recommend that. That's like my favorite book. Watership Down is excellent for reading aloud. It's beautiful. And even a reluctant reader, my boys thought that book was going to be stupid, but they loved it. So Watership Down is always good for reading aloud.
Awesome. Well, so do you have any other tidbits or pieces of little advice? What do you do when, do you ever run into where you feel like you're in a rut or the children get uninterested for a while, where you have to be a little more creative or try a different tactic with using literature as your curriculum?
We tend to, if we're getting to a point where we've been studying a particular topic for a while and everyone's just sort of getting annoyed with having to do that again, which usually hits around February. That's when we just drop everything and we'll just do something totally different for a while. We might just like pick a topic that we've been curious about or that I think they'd be interested in. For example, I think my youngest is going to lead me into a rabbit trail studying Alexander Hamilton because we've been listening to the Hamilton soundtrack a lot lately. So she's been asking all kinds of questions about that. So we'll probably pick up a whole new topic to study for a while and read a bunch of books about that and then go back to our normal studies. But yeah, I'm a big believer in taking a break and doing something different for a while when people are getting in a rut.
Right. Right. So you do follow rabbit holes because we certainly do.
Oh, yeah.
I know at our house. Yeah.
Yeah. Which especially in the younger years, it can tend to feel very, very crazy. We jump from topic to topic so much that it doesn't look like we're studying any one particular thing the whole year.
Right.
But yeah.
But I think in many ways, I think that's one of the, at least for me, one of the secrets to homeschooling is to strike when the iron is hot, when they have.
Absolutely. Flexibility.
I learned the hard way. The worst thing you can do is be like, okay, let's just get through these next 2 weeks of this, and then we'll come back to that. And by the time you go back to it, they're
not interested anymore.
And they're no longer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I would say, what's your one piece of homeschooling advice? Strike while the iron is hot, even if it means everything you've planned goes out the window for a while. You can come back to it. It's okay.
Yeah, that's what I always tell people. You know, you'll have plenty of time to learn about ancient Greece or whatever topic you're happen to be in the middle of. There's always time to come back. If your child wants to know more about Alexander Hamilton right now, then you stop what you're doing and you get out some books. And
yeah,
you
exactly.
study Alexander Hamilton. Yeah.
I know people ask me, do I ever worry about gaps in my daughter's education? And I always respond with, well, I don't worry about the gaps in mine. you know, I mean,
we all have gaps.
We all have those gaps. And, you know, even after living almost half a century, I still have things that I know nothing of, and I'm always learning, and I'm a lover of learning, and that's what I, you know, I think what we all really want to pass on to our kids is to love to learn and to know how to learn.
Absolutely.
So, well, do you have
learning
anything
never
that you... Exactly. Learning never stops. Do you have anything that you'd like to add that if I didn't hit every note that you wanted to hit today?
Actually, I think we covered just about everything. I don't think I had anything
I feel
extra.
Like we, Now, do you have, I will ask you this then, for those who are interested in Charlotte Mason secular homeschooling, do you have any resources that you would say you definitely want to check out, this website or this Facebook group or something like that?
There is a Facebook group. I think it's called Secular Charlotte Mason Homeschoolers.
Okay.
That I found
okay.
That's like one of the very few resources out there on that. Yeah, there's not a lot. The majority of stuff on the internet about Charlotte Mason homeschooling tends to be religious. But yeah, I think there's a Facebook group, Secular Charlotte Mason Homeschoolers.
Well, wonderful then. So if any of our listeners are interested in finding out more or trying that approach, at least there's a Facebook group. I don't know what we do without Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
The amount of resources and support you can get. All right. Well, listen, Emily, it was wonderful talking to you. Are you all going to be attending the CE Homeschool Conference in June?
Absolutely. Yes, I
As
will be
July.
There.
Oh, great. So wonderful. I'll be there too. So it'll be good to see you again. I haven't seen you since the last conference.
I know. Yeah, it'll be great.
It will be. I look forward to it then. Well, thank you very much for spending some of your afternoon with us and giving our listeners a chance to better understand. And, of course, your website is available for anyone who would be interested in perusing what you have to offer. I have some of your products and have enjoyed them very much. So build your library, folks. Make sure you check them out. And, Emily, I thank you again, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.